Thank you. ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಬ್ರಜಗಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಎಂ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಕುಲನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾಮಿಕಿ ಬೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿ ದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಯೋಗ ಪ್ರೇಮ ನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಶಿಶಿರ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ
ನಾನಾಖ್ಯಾನಕೇಸರ ಘರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನಾ ಬೋಧಿತಂ ലോകൈ സജ്ജന കൽപ്പതൈ ലഹരഹ പ്രേപീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാ ഭാരതമംഗജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽക്കുവാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദ മാധവം യബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സവേവേദൈ സാംഗവദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതതദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദു സുരാസുരജനൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമരാധികായേ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So last Saturday we were discussing from the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita and which was, we finished at the verse 26. So continuing from there, as we saw in this chapter, Krishna was comparing karma sannyasam and karma yoga. Karma sannyasam means to give up all karma, completely give up all work and fully take to the process of the knowledge, path of knowledge, to advance in Krishna consciousness. Karma yoga means to engage in service of Krishna and offer all the results to Krishna with the understanding that we are not the doer nor we are the benefactor or the enjoyer of the results. So these two processes which Arjuna has questioned, which one is the best? In answer to that, Krishna mentioned that both the processes are, in fact, strictly speaking, they are the same. In result-wise, they are the same. But the process is much easier through Karma Yoga rather than the process of Karma Sannyasam. Karma Yoga is easier to execute than Karma Sannyasam. So that is what the whole chapter Krishna has explained. And at the end, that Krishna mentioned that the processes in relationship with the that what is necessary to practice spiritual life, what kind of mind, intelligence, senses are necessary to prepare oneself for practicing spiritual life. Krishna is pleased with those who follow this process very strictly because in order to please Krishna, Krishna has to understand the absolute truth. Without Krishna's help, it is not possible to realize oneself or to realize the self. The process is completely depending on Krishna. Krishna has given the understanding, the knowledge what is required to advance on the path of spiritual life. So that's what we are discussing. We came to the chapter verse 26. And then in the next verse, Sparshan Gritva Bihirbahyam Chakshushchai Vandare Bhruvo Pranabhano Samau Gritva Nasabhyantarajarino Edendriyamano Buddhir Munir Mokshavarayanaha Vigadecha Bhayakrodha Yasada Muktayevasaha. That Krishna says there in these two verses that a personality who is developing spiritual knowledge and one who wants to leave this material world and goes back to the spiritual world, how he should execute his life in this world. That actually, strictly speaking, this material body is a result of karma. Karma means that has created this body. Due to our own activities in different lifetimes, in different ways, both pious activities and sinful activities, that has resulted in what is known as karma phalam, the result of one's own activities. So that karma phalam, or the results what we have, is normally categorized into three groups. The three groups are, one is called prarabdham, other one is called sanchitam, and the third one is called agamam. There are three different kinds of karma, what is associated with the karma. The total substance is called karma, but that is divided into these three groups. The difference between each of these karma means that from our karma account or the bank account, whatever we have executed, there is so many reactions which are likely to sprout in due course. So every time when we accept a material body, a certain part of that karma is utilized to be utilized in this particular body. For example, when we appear in, when we take birth in this world, a material body that has been given to us by the material nature,
that body, a certain amount of happiness and distress is bound to be there. And that's already predetermined much before we have accepted this body, because that is decided by the higher laws of nature. And when it is decided like that, this body is generally called as Prarabdha Shariram. Prarabdha Shariram means the material body that has come from Prarabdha Karmam. So Prarabdha Karmam is the cause of this particular body. As long as the Prarabdha Karmam is there, this material body will stay. As soon as the Prarabdha Karmam is finished, the material body drops off, it's finished. And then we have to go back and get another material body, and another amount of karmam is taken out to be utilized again in another body. So stage by stage, karmam gets turned into prarabdham, prarabdha karmam, and we get continuously utilized in every body, every material body. So normally what happens is that when we are experiencing the prarabdha karmam in this body, simultaneously we are also creating new karmam for ourselves, new karmam and karmic reactions from that. Karma and its reactions will come later on. Although you may execute the work now or execute the karma now, the results may not happen in this lifetime. That will go and stay and accounted in your karma account or karma bank, whatever it is called. It will stay there. And that is known as Sanjita Karma. Once it goes and stays like that, this karma, what you are creating now in your present activities, that will develop, mature into, it will go into account and it will stay there. It will stay there. And later on, that thing will turn out back again into prarabdham when you have to accept another material body. This is why the cycle of birth and death is a continuous process. You keep on changing the material body, keep on creating more karma, changing more body. Like this is continuous. That's why it's a cycle of birth and death, as is called. Samsara dhavan analitha loga. That's samsara. Samsara means this, the material existence. What does that mean? Everything from the time of birth to the time of death, and from time of death to the time of birth again. This is the cycle. Come back to birth, death, this cycle. This process continues. Spirit soul, the living entity, has to accept new material bodies one after the other. So that is the way it works. Now, this karma, which is likely to fructify later, that is called the agamam, agama karma. In other words, the karma you are likely to create now, and that will develop later on. What is left behind in the account after taking the karma for this particular material body, what is left behind is called sanchitam. Sanchitam means what is in storage. Prarabdha means that is already fructified. Agama means that you are going to create, which will develop later on and become ready for getting another material body or prarabdham. So prarabdham, agamam, sanchitam, three different kinds of karma. That is what we have. Now, in this particular material body, what we have to experience is the prarabdham. That is already known, prarabdha karma. And this prarabdham is a very complicated thing, because prarabdham generally, one cannot escape. This is the general conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam also. That prarabdham, you cannot wipe it out. It is very, very difficult, because even if you practice Krishna consciousness, spiritual life for a long time, still sometimes you may find so many distresses and disturbances coming to you from one way or the other. And you may wonder why, even after practicing spiritual life, I'm still exposed to such a distress in my life. Although you have given up your sinful activities, you have taken to the process of spiritual life very seriously, but in spite of that, you will still see that the prarabdha karma will come back and give you trouble. Because already the prarabdha karma is decided, and that is not touched by the laws of nature. The laws of material nature is such that prarabdham you have to experience. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find so many instances where prarabdha karma, people had to wait till that is finished. They had to wait. They had no other choice. They had to wait. They were great, great devotees, great personalities. And they have practiced all kinds of austerities, penances, cultivated spiritual knowledge, and developed spiritually very advanced. But still, they had no choice except to wait till the prarabdha karma is over. Even Sri Narada Maharshi, the greatest the devotee, he had to wait till his prarabdha karma is over. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can find that. Arabdha karma nirvanam yavadal panchabhautikaha. That panchabhautika means this material body, five material elements, earth, water, air, ether and fire. These are the five material elements. This body is made of these five material elements. So Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, in the Bhagavatam in the beginning you can find it, that I have, when he realized, when he saw Krishna, after Krishna appeared in front of him, Krishna told Narada Muni that you will have to stay in this body till the reactions are over. That means Prarabdha Karma is over. So he had to wander in this world waiting for the body to drop. He says there, in the Bhagavatam you can see there, Arabdha karma nirvanam yavadal panchabhautika. Till these five material elements, the body dropped off, I had to wait. He admits there, that thing. And similarly, you will find in several instances in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that also in the Ramayanam and Mahabharatam also, Prarabdha karma generally is difficult to get out. It's very, very difficult. Is it not that something which Krishna cannot do anything about it? Krishna can certainly do. Krishna can change prarabdha karma of a person. But normally he doesn't do it. Because it's understood. A devotee takes the process of Krishna consciousness and he is progressing throughout life. And Krishna allows him in such a way that at least in that particular body, whatever karma that's been allocated, that is the prarabdham, that Krishna normally doesn't change. Unless he is an extraordinary devotee, extraordinary personality. In most of the normal circumstances, prarabdham will stay. So, in tomorrow, Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to discuss about a devotee whose prarabdham was changed. So, that is another interesting thing, that sometimes you meet such devotees whose prarabdham Krishna has changed. So, that is very, very, very special cases. Very special cases. Not at all. Very unusual thing to happen, which we'll discuss tomorrow. So, here, what is important is, Krishna says here, that this material body will stay till the prarabdham is over. Therefore, prarabdham, you cannot escape. Actually, when one is self-realized, even within this material body, there is no need for this material body, isn't it? He has already realized his soul. He is within this body. He is living there. The personality individual who has already self-realized, he is still within his material body. But he doesn't need the material body, but at the same time, he can't escape from the material body. He normally has to wait till the karma is over, till the prarabdham is finished. That is what it is mentioned. So generally, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam also, that even after one has self-realized, one should still wait till the body drops away. So that time, after self-realization, and till the time he leaves his body, that is a very a time what he is helpless about it. He is just waiting for the body to drop. Already he self-realized, he has completely freed himself from attachment to the body and from the matter. He is completely released, he is already released. Although he is released, he has to wait. He has no choice. He has to wait till the body has drop. So, in these two verses, Krishna says that Sparshan Grutu Mehurbahyam Chakshushaiva Andare Bhruvo Pranabhano Samagrutva Nasabhyandra Charino. That how to bring both the eyes under the control of the center between the eyes here and bring Pranavayu and Abhanavayu out of the five different kinds of air that circulate in the body. Pranan, Abhanan, Vyanan, Samanan, Udanan. Pranan and Abhanan, they have to be combined together and bring a balance between Pranan and Abhanan. If you execute that way, the desire, fear and anger, such things will be completely brought under control. And also one will experience that he will be desiring for liberation from this material world, and at the same time he has to spend his time, rest of the time in this world, without being the doer as well as the not thinking he is the enjoyer. And as soon as the prarabdham is finished, he is liberated. That's what Krishna says. That yadindri mano buddhir munir moksha parayanaha vihare ichha bhaya krodha yasada mukta evasaha bhoktaram yajnadamasam sarva loga maheshwaram suhurdam sarva bhudanam yatvamam shanti mruchadim.
in this last verse in this chapter, Krishna says, Voktaram Yajnadamasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram, that Krishna says, I am the enjoyer. I am the enjoyer. And all these sacrifices, austerities, and yogas, everything is meant to for my satisfaction. Sukradam sarvabhudanam. And one who realizes this and execute his life in this way, Sukradam sarvabhudanam. I am the friend of all the living entities, Krishna says. And if one lives in that understanding, then yatvamaham shanti vrachari. There is every possibility that he will be peaceful in life. He does not have to worry about anything. Yatvamaham shanti vrachari. Shanti means peace at the end. So, Bhoktaram yajnadavasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. Sukhradam sarvabhudanam yatvamaham shanti vrachari. Actually, for all these verses, very detailed purport Srila Prabhupada has given in order to understand as detailed as possible. It's been discussed in written in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not going through all that detailed purports because of the limitation in time. And also, these chapters, particularly in relationship with karma, that is an important chapter. And here, what is important to realize is that for a devotee, these things are not absolutely very vital, because if you read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita at the same time, you will notice that these things are discussed in the Bhagavatam, and Sukadeva Goswami, while talking to Parikshit Maharaj, he has mentioned and compared this yoga system. For example, here if you look, earlier in this chapter, Krishna mentioned that in the verse 4, in this chapter 5, verse 4, Sankhya Yoga Upadakpala Pravadandina Panditaha Egamapyastida Samyak Upayorvindade Bhalam. There, a reference is made to Sankhyam and Yogam. Sankhya means analytical knowledge, that is, which leads us to Jnana Margam. So, analytical knowledge and Yogam, Karma Margam, is also discussed there. Now, although these are all spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, when it comes to Srimad Bhagavatam, the scene little bit changes, because particularly with reference to Kali Yugam and the people in the age of Kali, they would find many of these things very difficult to execute because of the time we are living in, the time and the conditions in this world today. And that Sukadeva Goswami has spoken about it in the Bhagavatam while talking to Parikshit Maharaj. The same Sankhya and Yogam, Sukadeva Goswami says there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that edaval sanghe yoganja swadharma parinishtaya janmalabha parapumsam andye narayana smradim. That there, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit Maharaj, that this sanghyam and yogam, they are very good, but what is the use, he says. Edaval sanghe yoganja, not only that, swadharma parinishtaya, that even if one is busy with one's own swadharma, Sodharma means according to Varnashramam, one executes one karma according to Varnashramam. Even if that is done properly, he says there, Janmalabha Varapumsam Andye Narayana Spradim. That the result of all these things at the end, if you want to make a balance sheet of your life at the end, what did I lose and what did I gain at the end? If you want to be on the profit side, Sudeva Goswami says to Parishad, Janmalabha Varapumsam. That at the time of death, one should be able to remember Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one does not remember Krishna at the time of death, you may have done all Sankhyam, Yogam, Karmam, Yanam, everything. It is not considered to be a profitable life. This is Sudeva Goswami's conclusion. It's a very important conclusion in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Edaval Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Sodharma Varinishtaya Janmalabha Varapumso Andiye Narayana Smradi. Narayana Smradi, otherwise remembering Narayana, remembering Krishna at the time of death, that is the most vital thing. If you do not remember, maybe you have done all this yoga all along your life, karmam, yanam, sankhyam, yogam, everything. But the time of death, you had to leave your body in a miserable condition and you could not remember Krishna at that time. Then what is the benefit? There is nothing benefit in the sense that you may get another body again, and there's possibilities that you may get a better life also, better birth in another next life. But Bhakti Yoga process is so wonderful that Janmala Upavare Pumsam Andhye Narayana Smrani. If one remembers Krishna at the time of leaving the body, then he goes back. He goes back to Krishna. That is the benefit. That somehow or the other, if one can remember Krishna's lotus feet at the time of leaving the body, that is much more profitable. That is the best. So the best profitable deal one can make out of it. So there Goswami says to Parikshit. And because it is like that, but in Bhagavad Gita, everything is discussed. Krishna has discussed all these things in order to make Arjuna understand that the process of devotion, Krishna consciousness, is far, far superior to all other processes of yoga system. All the other yoga system, one can discuss and talk about it, engage oneself in that, but success is not guaranteed. The reason for that is that the jnanam, karmam and bhakti, these are the three processes discussed in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The devotee or process, one who is following bhakti process, he is always under the protection of Krishna. Krishna takes care of the devotee. He does not have to take care of a karma yogi or a jnani. To neither of them, Krishna has no obligation. Krishna doesn't feel any obligation to either of them. As far as jnani is concerned, Krishna says he is endeavoring very hard to become perfect. He is following the process. And one day he may succeed or not, depending on his own effort and also his determination to do it. A lot of things are involved in that. His capacity for detachment from this material world, renunciation, so many factors come into. For a person who is following the Karma Yoga process, Karma Yoga is a, first of all, a difficult process to execute. But at the same time, if one sticks with only Karma Yoga, that is not good enough. Eventually from karma, one has to come to the process of bhakti or to jnanam. Either way, one way or the other, one has to come to that. But if that does not happen, simply executing karma yoga throughout life, although it may purify the person to a large extent, to a high degree, but at the same time, ultimately, Krishna consciousness is necessary to get the final release note from this material body. So, material existence. That is why it's so important to understand that Krishna consciousness is a superior science, superior process than karma margam or jnana margam. So therefore, all these things are still explained in the Bhagavad Gita in order that those who are trying to follow the yoga process still understand the intricacies of that. Bhoktaram yadavasam sarvaloka maheshwaram sukhrutam sarvabhudanam yatvamam shanti vrachanim. That up to this point, what was covered in this chapter is, up to this point, up to the end of this chapter 5, in the second we started with Sankhyam, isn't it? Sankhya Yogam or the analytical knowledge was the topic we discussed in the second chapter. And after that, Krishna continuously spoke about karma and the different aspects of karma. Karma Yogam, Karma Sannyasam and the intricacies of karma. All that was discussed up to the end of this. In other words, in the second chapter and then third, fourth and fifth is all about Karma Yogam. How to execute Karma Yoga. This is what has been discussed. The different complications involved in while performing Karma Yoga and how that will affect our consciousness and our future in the spiritual life. All that was discussed there. Now, at the end of, in the middle of the second chapter, Sankhya Yoga was over. But Karma Yoga was discussed after that in the third, fourth and fifth chapter in detail. Whatever one has to know about Karma Yoga, everything has been spoken in these three chapters. Now, some questions come. Normally, people who are very advanced in spiritual knowledge, they know that with karma, one cannot get liberation. Karma is not the cause of liberation. Karma is actually a cause of bondage. It binds you to this world. In other words, the more one engages in karma in this world, if one is more entangled in karma, that means he is actually increasing his material existence in this world, continuously increasing the material existence. That's what's the result of karma. So among the learned circles, among the learned personalities in the who follows the jnana margam or the path of knowledge, normally they always reject karma for one reason only. that they don't want to entangle too much in this world, and because of that degrade themselves. On the other hand, they stop the karma and they cultivate spiritual knowledge and advance in that way. But the difficulty comes that they reject karma completely, but the chances are that success in their spiritual path of knowledge is not completely guaranteed. They may find it very difficult. But it is a fact, what they say, that karma is binding. Karma is a cause of bondage, which means that you are actually increasing your number of lives in this world, change of bodies. It's more, because more and more you create karma, that means you have to accept more and more material body. That is the result of that. So from that point of view, it is true that karma is a problem. Karma causes difficulty. And this is quite true also. But the karma yoga, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, is not like that. Karma yoga does not bind you. Karma yoga actually liberates you. Karma yoga does not bind you. Karma yoga actually liberates you. So in other words, when one is executing karma yoga, that one is going, advancing on the spiritual path, eventually one will come to the process of knowledge or to the process of devotion. It will happen at much later time when if it is executed properly. If karma yoga is executed properly, it purifies oneself, that if you benefit from that. It's not like karma. Karma and karma yoga are two different things. Karma is the one which you do with full understanding that I am the doer, I am going to get this money, I am going to make this business, I am going to make this benefit from this, and I am the enjoyer, I have done this, I have done that, everything, I have full identification without any consideration of Krishna's involvement in that, and totally acting independently and thinking yourself to be the doer and the enjoyer and expecting the results from that, that is karma. Karma yoga means when one is completely released from this conception of me and mine. I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. And offering all results to Krishna with the understanding that one has to purify oneself by his service to Krishna. That is karma yoga. So karma and karma yoga are two different things. In the external world, when you look at people, sometimes you may find people are two people. One is in karma, executing karma, and one is executing karma yoga. They may act in the same way, but the process that they are following are two different. One follows karma and the other one follows the karma yoga. So the result of karma is distress. That is also there. The results of karma is continuous distress. The results of karma yoga is purification and knowledge. That's what comes from karma yoga. So karma and karma yoga are two different things. And Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita through these three chapters that this is an opportunity in life, human life, unless one engages in karma yoga. That is simply you have increased your bondage in this world. You have increased your lifespan in this world and to suffer more, come back and accept another material body. People have to be conscious of this, that Vedic philosophy is based on this one important point, the influence of karma and the changing the body one after the other. Those who are advanced in knowledge in the Vedic point of view will always be very weary of these things, that I am unnecessarily increasing my life in this world, my life, different bodies I have to accept. So in order to get out of that, they take to karma yoga quickly in order to free themselves from the influence of karma. So, bhoktaram yadavasam sarvaloga maheshwaram suhrudam sarvabhudanam yatvamam shantim rachadim. So actually, why is karma such a problem? Because karma stands on your way for liberation. You cannot never get liberated as long as there is karma behind you. Karma holds you back. So for liberation, karma is the obstacle. Whereas executing karma yoga means you free yourself from the reactions of karma. Therefore, and it gets destroyed eventually. So Krishna consciousness and karma yoga, they are together. So action in Krishna consciousness means one executes one karma in relationship with Krishna. So Krishna, in other words, this spiritual knowledge, when it is associated with karma, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, when it is associated with karma, then it becomes karma yoga. Otherwise it is not. So bhakti, sankhyam, yogam, all these things, you can experience the same results in due course. For example, before one comes to the devotional process or Krishna consciousness, fully before surrendering to Krishna, one has to spare time and energy in serving Krishna. And that brings a detachment and renunciation from the material world. Otherwise, that is one that purifies a person. And unless and until one is purified, all the spiritual knowledge, what's spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, will not manifest in a person. This is what Krishna says there. That for Karma Yogi, there is not a... all the... what does Karma Yogam bring? Karma Yogam develops renunciation in a person. As long as one is executing karma, you can see the person's nature also, that he sees everything in this world purely from the viewpoint of a prophet. Prophet. And prophet means that everything he does in this world, unless the results are there for him to satisfy his desires, he does not see any benefit in doing that. So in other words, what karma develops inside is tremendous attachment to the material body, selfishness, and also bondage. These are the subtle effects of the karma. On the other hand, karma yoga is that process by which one can free oneself from this attachment to the material body, number one. Number two, by executing karma yoga, one becomes selfless, free from this identification that I am the doer and I need to get the benefit. Because unless and until one sees Krishna's presence in other living entities also, and willing to serve himself, oneself, for in the service of Krishna's devotees or Krishna. Otherwise, this service will not have, otherwise there will be no meaning. Because continuously hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, this process of purification begins like this. And that is why it is mentioned there that this Karma Yoga process is purifying. All the time it purifies a person. Somehow or the other, this whole material creation is nothing but Krishna's Krishna's energy that has manifested here. And this opportunity given to the living entity, one who wants to advance in the spiritual path, he should follow this and utilize that time and energy in his control to serve Krishna. And by that service, one gets purified, and from that purification, spiritual knowledge will develop in a person. So that is the importance of Karma Yoga. Up to this point, end of this fifth chapter, Karma Yoga is closed there. Krishna doesn't discuss any more karma after this. From now on, from the next few chapter, I think the 6th, 7th and 8th chapter, 6th, 7th and 8th, and also the 9th chapter, 4 chapters from now on, Krishna discusses about yoga system. Yoga. Yoga means Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga means Patanjali Maharshi, Sage Patanjali, he is the personality who wrote this great book called as Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga system, he compiled that book. And in that he has, Patanjali is actually an incarnation of Lord Balaram or Sankarshanamurti, Adishesha. They are all the same person. They appeared at different times in Vaikuntha. When he is the bed of Krishna, he is called Adishesha. In Goloka Vrindavan, association with Krishna, he is Balaram. And he is also the quadruple expansion of Krishna, he is Sankarshanamurti. So Sankarshana, Balaram, Adishesha, same personality came as Patanjali. And Patanjali discussed this yoga system, Ashtanga yoga system, and it is one of the processes by which one can advance in spiritual life. But this yoga system has its own difficulties also, which we'll see as you discuss and go through Bhagavad Gita, you will find the problems of this yoga process. But because it is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, we will go through this, because otherwise for a devotee, all these things are not necessary. It's no need for that, because that is included in the Bhakti Yoga in a different way. The same goal, what one is trying to achieve through Ashtanga Yoga or through Jnana Yoga, all these things comes in Bhakti Yoga also in a different way, as long as it's executed properly. Bhakti Yoga will bring you to the same point where yoga systems like Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga will take you to. So it will take you further than that. So there, on the other hand, Bhakti Yoga is much more pleasant to execute. It's much more joyfully performed, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita. That sasuham gartum avyayam, it is much more executed very joyfully, Bhakti Yoga, which you do not find in Ashtanga Yoga or in the Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga. So therefore, when we read through these chapters, you have to bear this in mind, that you may not have to feel disturbed or depressed about it, they are unable to do all these things, what Krishna says there, it is not necessary for a devotee to go through this. But these things are there because it is the science of self-realization. There are people who are inclined in this way, and you cannot. They also have to have an opportunity to advance spiritually. So therefore, Krishna has given different options to everybody. But majority of people in the age of Kali would find it very difficult to follow this. First of all, to find a teacher who can teach you these things properly. And the instruction is this: one should not learn this without the guidance of a teacher. And if you do that, if you do it without any direction from someone superior, there is possibility that you may get into trouble. So all these things are there in the Ashtanga Yoga system. There are 8 different steps in the Ashtanga Yoga: Yamam, Niyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, Dharana, Dhyanam, Samadhi. This is the 8 different stages in the Ashtanga Yoga. One has to be, what is Yamam, what is Niyamam? Controlling the mind, controlling the senses, and execution of regulations, principles. So many injunctions are there in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the sitting posture, how one could control one's sitting. Then how to control the air, breathing air inside the body, pranayama. Likewise it goes on, pratyaharam, then dharana, then dhyanam, then samadhi. All these things, this is all coming in this chapter. So eventually, unless and until one reaches successfully up to the point of dhyanam, which is the 7th step out of these 8, and when through dhyanam, you go into samadhi. And when one has come to samadhi, then you can say you have more or less got to the final stage. But even if you have gone to samadhi, there is no guarantee that you will be able to stay there. You will get samadhi in the beginning for some time, for half an hour in a day. And then as much as you practice it, the samadhi will increase. You will go into samadhi often then afterwards. So like this, this process which requires a lot of determination and energy for the person who is following this path has a very difficult time from the very beginning itself. And one has to have be completely committed to that. He's not able to do anything else in this world except he follows this process very rigidly. And years ago, this was followed also by many people. Many people who are very enthusiastic about yoga system, they will try to advance on the Ashtanga Yoga system. And Patanjali's this book, Yoga Darshanam, it is called. It begins there, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. That is what it says there. The beginning itself, one has to control one's mind. That is the most difficult thing. Now, controlling the mind, we all know how easy it is. That it doesn't require any explanation to that, controlling the mind is concerned. So in this Bhagavad Gita, if you read this chapter, Arjuna is also complaining to Krishna the same thing. You are complaining from birth to death, that how to control this mind. So you can see, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodham. Chitta Vritti Nirodham means how to stop this mind wandering around in different ways. That is what it says. Chitta Vritti Nirodham. That is what Patanjali calls as yoga. So in order to get to that stage, it is very difficult. Very, very difficult. And in the modern times, with our way of life today, I could not imagine that anyone could do it because of the lifestyle we lead. And also our strength of mind and determination, everything. But whatever it is, still it is there in the Bhagavad Gita. So yogam chitta vritti nirodham. Nirodham means to controlling the mind. Now if you go to Srimad Bhagavatam, you will also find there nirodho muktirashrayaha. 10th canto is also called a nirodham. You see, in the bhakti process, nirodham is one way. In the yoga process, nirodham is in a different way. Nirodham means to block something. What is that block? Block is this, that between us and Krishna, there is a wall. A wall exists. And this wall is actually blocking us, between us and Krishna. Wall is that is the curtain between us. We are not able to understand our relationship with Krishna. We come to this world, we spend a lot of time in various activities, not fully knowing what we are doing all this for. And one day, after all this suffering, I have to call it a suffering because it's not very pleasant. One has to go on hammering in this world for what? At the end. And we have, ultimately what we have done is, because we don't know what we are doing all these things for, we have developed some logic to justify our existence in this world. That's what we have done. Strictly speaking, if you look at this world, many big leaders, somebody will impose nationalism on you. They'll say you have to be nationalistic, very patriotic, this, that and the other. Somebody else will impose upon you family attachment, says to you, you have to look after your family, you have to be very concerned about your children, you have to worry about this, that and the other. So many things, and somewhere or the other, they will bind you. So in other words, one time your family catches you. In another place, your country catches you. The politicians and all that lot, they will get hold of you. So you get victimized by all these people. And in the time of death, politicians are not there, your family is also not there. You are lying in some Watford General Hospital, waiting for to leave your body. What can your family do? What can your society do? Nobody is able to help you anything at that time. So this is the reality. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, these things are spoken very explicitly. When Bhishma Pitamaha was leaving his body, Krishna decided that he should speak to this world what Bhishma had to say. Bhishma had a lot of time to leave his body. He had spent 58 days after the war was over, on the 58th day, the 18 days the Mahabharata war lasted. So another 40 days or so, Bhishma had to stay on the bed of arrows. So while he was lying on the bed of arrows, Yudhishthira Maharaj, who has won the war, but who was so depressed about the whole thing, that millions of people got killed, what did I gain from this, he says. Yudhishthira said, what did I gain from this war? All I have got at the end is a sorrowful history of millions of women, no husband, millions of children, no father, and millions of old people who lost their children. So what was the gain from this? This was what Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Krishna about it. So Krishna brought him to Yudhishthira and all the other Pandavas to Bhishma. On that particular day, when Krishna knew that Bhishma was leaving the body. So at that time, on that particular day, Krishna also prompted all the sages to come there. Krishna wanted everybody should be present there. And Krishna himself came to the scene. Bhishma was leaving his body. While he was leaving the body, for hours and hours, Yudhishthira Maharaj was asking several questions. And Krishna directed Bhishma to reply everything. Because Bhishma was a learned personality, a great soul, who could give up his body when he wanted to. That was his greatness. Swachanda Mrityu. Anytime he could give up his body at the time he wanted. Similarly, he had no attachment everywhere. Totally liberated soul. Already liberated. That was obvious the way he acted in this world. Siddha Pranyatam, like Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna used to love Bhishma so much for this personality. That never got married, never got involved in this world anywhere, but simply executed his work and decided to leave this world when he wanted to go. So in that process, Bhishma spoke to Yudhishthira Maharaj many, many things. So at that time, all these great sages who have come there, Dhaumya, Vedavyas, Asita, Devala, Vishwamitra, Bharadwaj, Parashuram, there is a number of them mentioned there. All these great sages were prompted to come there. And they were all present there while he was leaving this body. So, in the end of all the discussions, Bhishma Pitamaha said to Krishna and Yudhishthira Maharaj, now let me speak a few words about Krishna, he said. And he spoke about Krishna very eloquently. And he said to Pandavas and to everybody who were present there, none of you understand who is Krishna. And in a beautiful way, he talked about Krishna and Krishna's personality. It is famous in the Bhagavatam, known as Bhishma Stuti, Bhishma's glorification of Krishna. And after that, Bhishma Pitamaha focused his eyes on Krishna. And looking at Krishna, he gave up his body. And he got the opportunity to glorify Krishna. And during the glorification, he said that what all different mercy Krishna has shown to him throughout the life. He remembered everything. And he also spoke about Krishna's different activities and where he exhibited particularly 3 or 4 instances where he showed to the world who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Rajasuya sacrifice, in the Rasa dance, and in the Mahabharata war, all these instances Bhishma Pitamaha remembered at the time of death. So he got an opportunity to do that. He also got an opportunity to remind everyone Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only that, he was able to see Krishna at the time of leaving the body. So we don't have to discuss what his destination is, isn't it? You know, nothing is required after that. When you got the opportunity. So after this was over, everybody was going home. All the people were going home. So the sages were talking to each other. Because they have come it was a great occasion for them. The sages wanted to witness Bhishma's departure. They were very, very attached to Bhishma. And they had a great, great respect for Bhishma. So how Bhishma left the body, they all thought about it. It is like that, isn't it? In us also. Suppose when you go for a big festival, in the festival, when you finish the festival and you are going home, and what will normally people discuss? People will discuss different things depending on their taste. Ordinary people like us will discuss about the prasadam first. What kind of prasadam was there? Because that's our realization from the festival. Because what has satisfied my tongue? That is what we will look at. Because our level of realization is like that. Some other people who are interested in music, they will think, oh, it was very nice kirtan. We had a good music. Good kirtan was performed. Or something related like that. Somebody else who are more interested in drama or other things like artistic things, they will be involved, they will comment about that. So different people will see different things in the festival. Similarly, when the sages were leaving from here, when the sages were going home, they were talking about something different because they are saintly people. They know the life and its purpose much better than the ordinary people. So one sage was talking to the other, saying to him that if you have to leave your body in this world, this is how one should leave your body. Like the way Bhishma left his body, he says there. So this thing, when he came to Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyas did not put it very, did not explain it very much there. He mentioned it in a very, very one line, he put the whole thing in there. But through that one line, Vedavyasa Maharshi wanted to say a big important message to this world. That you can today decide how you want to leave this world. But you have no choice actually. When you want to die, you have no choice, have you? You don't know when you will die. Nobody knows. Nobody has the freedom to decide when you want to die. Nobody has the freedom to decide where you want to die. You may make the best arrangements to die when on a nice sunny day when the whole family is around you after having a nice feast in the morning, I lie down in my bed and slowly give up my body. It doesn't work like that, does it? So there also you have no control on that. You have no control on that situation. So when you want to die, you have no freedom to decide. Where you want to die, you have no freedom to decide that either. So in every way, you are not in control. That is the point. What Vedavyasa is saying there. You have no freedom to decide. And how you want to die, that also is not in your control, is it? That you may like to die. Some people will say, oh, it would be nice if I can just die in my sleep. But the person who has spoken like that, he may be lying for a few years in the hospital or in the old age home or wherever he is, or at home itself, in the bed, unable to do anything. So all these things can happen. It's not that these things won't happen. It may happen, none of this may not happen also. By luck you may get through from here, if you are very fortunate enough. But majority of the cases, and the old age is like that. These things, we have no freedom. So Vedavyasa is saying here, the sages were talking to each other when they were going home, that if you have to die in this world, this is how we should give up this body. This is what they were talking to each other. While they were saying like this, Vedavyasa is saying there that if you want to die in a particular way, you have one freedom Krishna has given to you. You have no freedom to decide when to die, no freedom to decide where to die, no freedom to decide how to die. But you have one freedom Krishna has given to you. You can pray to Krishna today that this is what I would like to leave my body. You can say to Krishna that today. And prepare yourself for that. And Krishna will bring that to happen at the last minute. When you really want finally to leave this world in a particular way, that is when you need that support from Krishna. And that is what Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there. Tadasta Krishna Hridayau Sashravau Prayau Punaha. Then Bhagavadam says like this. The sages were talking to each other. Tadasta Krishna Hridaya Swashravau Prayau Punaha. When they were going back to their ashram, to their hermitage, the sages, they were going back to their hermitage. They were saying to each other, Tadasta Krishna Hridaya Swashravau Prayau Punaha. Krishna Hridaya, they were fully absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. And they were going home. And they were praying to Krishna that this is how we would like to leave this world. In other words, bringing Vedavyasa Maharshi, bringing the Vishnu Vidamaha and the sages together is telling us the same message in the Bhagavadam. If you want to leave the world in a proper way, that thinking about Krishna, fully surrendered to Krishna, glorifying Krishna, chanting the holy name, devotees offering you prasadam from Krishna, offering you tulsi leaves and also an opportunity to leave this world in full Krishna consciousness. That is what it is spoken in the Nishaman Bhagavatam. So that is the best departure from this world, not through the yoga process or anything else. You may do so many things when you are strong and fit, but at the time of death, where that will happen is nobody knows. But devotee has an opportunity. A devotee has the opportunity. Krishna take care of him. Krishna takes care of the control of the situation. Devotee doesn't have to worry about it. It is Krishna's control. Whereas this opportunity is not given to the jnani or to the yogi or to anybody else. That is the specific beauty of the bhakti yoga process. So after discussing this, in the next 6 to 9 chapters, 6, 7, 8 and 9 is all about the yoga system. Anashir Shri Bhagavan Vaja, Anashrita Karma Valam, Karyam Karma Garodhiya, Tasanyasi Jayogija, Namirag Dharma Chakriya. That if you execute Anashrita Karma Valam, Karyam Karma Garodhiya, if one executes Karma Yoga for some time, it will purify a person inside out, it will be purified, and some development of renunciation will come to the mind. Majority, especially you have to remember, whom was Karma Yoga spoken in the first instance? Karma Yoga was spoken for the householder. I mentioned this before. Brahmachari and Sannyasi is not bound too much by this world, external world. It is this grahastha who is in deep trouble. This grahastha's life is big problem because few things are there. In the whole Shastram you will find this repeatedly mentioned about a grahastha has got the biggest problem. First thing, Eshanatrayam. Eshanatrayam means he has an attachment to the wife, children and money. These three things. And as long as these three things are top priority, it will not be much possible to do anything in this world. That the whole day after day, the whole mind is working on this direction. In this direction. So therefore, in order to purify the grihastha householder, Karma Yoga has been spoken about. As we mentioned before, all the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas in the original Varnashrama Dharma system, the Brahmanas were able to execute the Brahmanishta. In other words, they were fixed in spiritual life. They were pure enough not to get driven by these things. Their householder life was different. Whereas Kshatriyas were completely into karma, into a householder life, and for them Karma Yoga was important. So Kshatriyas advanced through Karma Yoga, Brahmanas advanced through Jnana Yoga. Eventually both of them were able to reach the Bhakti Yoga process. Most of them were able to. Or in other words, they will go further than the what they were in this life. But those who are in the age of Kali, who has no capacity to execute the process of knowledge, and especially those who are affected by the household life and entangled in the material world to a large degree, for them, Karma Yoga has been spoken. Karma Yoga will help them to purify themselves. Anashrita Karma Valam Karyam Karma Karodhiya Sa Sanyasi Jayoginja Nanirag Dharma Chakriyaha. That, so sometime if Karma Yoga is executed, that will purify that person. And at that time a Brahmachari who is performed Agni. Agni means the fire. Brahmachari's life is centered around the fire. Agni Upasana it is called. Agnihotram and also Vaishudevam. There are so many things mentioned in the in the shastras for the duty of the householder and the brahmachari. Now, similarly, sannyasis also has to perform sacrifices. Now, when he is executing, he is already given up karma. Sannyasi has no karma. He is released from that already. But at the same time, sa sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragdharma chakriyah, that the brahmachari ashram and grahastha ashram, that if it is executed following the ashrama dharma, or in that particular ashram, whatever dharma has to be performed, and without attachment to the results, it will purify him, and he can come to the become a level of a sannyasi. But ultimately, from all these things, what is necessary is vishaya vairagyam. Vairagyam means detachment from the sense objects or sense gratification. Householder life means what? Sense gratification. Basically, an opportunity to gratify the senses. And that is very formidable in the householder life. And no matter whatever you tell the householder will always be planning his sense enjoyment very nicely. And it's very difficult for him. Either that life goes on in that way for a long time, and then difficult to get out of it. So before that happens, Krishna says that if one takes care of oneself, he does not have to be victimized by the householder life. Then, so that purification, giving up sense gratification, purification of one's own consciousness, all these things are what is required for practicing yoga. So one cannot just jump into this Ashtanga Yoga system easily. If one is a householder, he has to perform, execute some Karma Yoga and purify himself and be detached from material life to some extent before he takes to this Ashtanga Yoga process also. And if it is done properly, then he can get into the Ashtanga Yoga. Yam sanyasam idi prahu yogam dham vidhi bandhava nahya sanyasta sangalpo yogi bhavati kashchanaha. What does yoga mean? Yoga means a controlled way of life, executing the one's own process of spiritual life. That whether one has renunciation or not, that there is no harm in executing this yoga. But in course of time, if one executes yoga, will that not get better? This is the question one may ask. We will say why one has to execute Karma Yoga for some time. Then, but the difficulty is, unless there is vairagyam, because if the mind is absorbed too much in the material world and material enjoyment, such a mind cannot control itself. It will drive you mad. It will drive you in different directions to different objects in this world. And therefore, if the mind is not controlled, concentration will not be there to execute this Ashtanga Yoga system. That therefore, it is mentioned there that although you may say you are performing sadhana, actually it is supposed to be yoga sadhana. Yoga sadhana means executing the yoga system. But actually it will not be yoga sadhana, it will be vishaya sadhana. Vishaya sadhana means a sense gratification. Sadhana for sense gratification. That is what it will end up with. So, disconnecting the mind from sense objects and sense gratification, that is the first process. That only after that one should enter into yoga sadhana or this Ashtanga Yoga process. Ayurvrukshormune yogam karma karana uchade yoga arudasya seva shama karana uchade. That karma yogam is that one purifies one, in due course makes him a yogi, isn't it? Even one executes karma yogam, it makes him a yogi in due course. And karmam is the cause of yogam, people are saying even in that way. But one who wants to, arirukshormune yogam karma karanam uchadeyam, if by performing karma yogam, if one has advanced to some extent, some control of the one's own mind one has achieved, then he can enter into yoga process, yoga sadhana, or what is discussed in this yoga system. That, and one, when he is fixed up in that yoga process, then he can move into the jnana-margam, to the path of knowledge. So here you will find two words, arirukshu and yoga ayurudha, two words. Arirukshu means one who is endeavoring for spiritual life, and yoga ayurudha means one is already fixed up in spiritual life. So two different positions for the same person, as much as he makes the advancement on the spiritual path. So Krishna says here that this process of yoga sadhana or Ashtanga Yoga system is possible to execute as long as one has done karma yogam to some extent
And then the possibility is that he will not fall down anymore from that. Adi Rukshomane Yogam Karmagaranam Chede Yoga Ruda Seda Seva Shamagaranam Chede Yada Hindriyateshu Nagarma Solution Jade Sarva Sangalpa Sanyasi Yoga Ruda Sado Chede. Then what is the symptom of a person who is advancing in this way? That is what Krishna is answering in that verse. Krishna is answering, your person is advancing in this process. How do you know that he is advancing on that path of Karma Yoga? He says here, Yada hi indriyarteshu na karma sanushajjade. When one is advancing on Karma Yoga, his desire for engaging in Kamya Karma. Kamya Karma means those kind of activities which are beneficial for him materially. That kind of Kamya Karma or material desires, to fulfilling the material desires, such activities will come down. It has to come to an end. Krishna says, Yada Hindriyartheshu. Another thing is Indriyartheshu. All the senses, Shabdam, Sparsham, Rubam, Rasam, Gandham, that means sound, touch, smell, form, and all these things, the five different enjoyments of the senses, that will come under control. That will not continue for very long. That has to be under control. So, as long as the mind is absorbed, if you allow the mind, if you give an opportunity to mind to engage in all these activities, mind will give you plenty of work to do. It will give you so much opportunity to think about and different sangalpam. Sangalpa means different kind of perceptions will come in the mind. It will keep coming. And as much as if you are driven by the mind, you will run around for that to fulfill all that desires. That's what you normally do. That we all do the same thing, that as much as the mind is dictating to us, we keep doing to fulfill that desire. And that way the whole life goes in that way. So Krishna says, that kind of mind is not very favorable for developing this yoga system. That when the mind is freed from such kind of sarva sangalpa sanyasi yoga arudastada ocharem, that when one is fixed up, all these things will go away from the mind. And purification will happen to the mind, and it is very steady, then ready to execute the yoga system. Udharid alpana alpanam, alpanam osamel, alpaimir alpanobandhu, alpaimir alpanaham. Krishna says, Udharid alpana alpanam, alpanam osamel. That one should elevate oneself, that's what Krishna likes. Uddhava asked Krishna, that why don't you take me back to the spiritual world? Krishna says, no. Krishna says, I'd like you to come back. I've given you the process. Execute this process and practice it and come back. That is what I would like you to do. And otherwise, if we say to Krishna, I cannot bother to read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, I will just take me there somehow, give me a ticket. If you say like that, the answer is also there. Krishna says, no, you're not going to come back with me. You stay there. I've given you what you have to do. Practice it first. The process is there. Udhareva alpana alpanam alpanam avasadayel alpanayu alpano bandhu alpayu avirir alpanaham. So we think that who is our friend and who is our enemy? Actually, we are our own friend. We are our own enemy. We blame everybody else in this world. He has done this to me. He has done that to me. That's why I am not able to do this. But this is all useless, because as far as Krishna is concerned, you have not managed to control yourself, because all the time you are busy with the external world. Udhareva alpana alpanam alpanam avasadayel alpanyayu alpano bandhu alpaiva virir alpanam. You are your friend and you are your enemy also. If you have learned how to control the mind and how to advance on the spiritual path, because spiritual life doesn't require anything externally help very much. It's your own strength of mind and determination and surrender to Krishna. And help from Krishna is necessary, not from much from outside otherwise. So Krishna says here that I like you to develop yourself, or in other words, to advance yourself in the spiritual path. That's what Krishna says. Udhareda alpana alpanam. One should elevate oneself, one's own soul, by one's own effort. That's what Krishna says. Alpanam avasadayel alpanyayu alpano bandhu. Krishna says here, one's own friend is one's own mind, and Atmaiva Virira Atmana. One's own friend is oneself, and one's own enemy is also oneself. Then, who created this material existence? We ourselves created, isn't it? Nobody else created this, we created.
we continue doing so many sinful activities, pious activities. The result of that is so many different bodies, one after the other. And we still continue to do the same thing. So more and more bodies. So once we got involved in this process of birth and death, the result is that this is what the final result. The result is that we continue to generate more and more material bodies, change one after the other, one after the other. This will continue. So this is where Krishna is talking about. Krishna is saying there that, understand, you are your friend, you are your enemy. Nobody else is your friend or enemy. And one should live, Krishna says, as one's own friend, not as an enemy. Those who consider, those who not care for the soul and only simply concerned about the body and bodily happiness, they are not their friends, their own friend. They are their enemies, actually. Because what they do is that they are creating more and more bodies for the soul, to themselves. And they are getting entangled and they are getting disturbed in that. So Krishna is saying that unless you realize this, what you are doing, and therefore this knowledge is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Then, one is in distress, no doubt about it. In this material world, everyone is in distress. But to get out of that distress, one should put endeavor for that. Nobody else is going to come and take you out of that. And what is the reason for all this distress? It's ignorance. Ignorance of oneself, one's own identification. Not developing the proper spiritual knowledge, in unnecessarily identifying with the material body. And even after hearing about this identification material body, still continue to do the same thing and again living in that life. So what can be done? Krishna says, that's why in the Bhagavadam, Krishna is lamenting about such people. He says, I cannot do anything about them because they have chosen that path. Labdhvasa durlabhamadam idam bahusambhavan deimanushyam atadamanityam abhihadiraha turnambadet yade anumurtiyaval nishrayasaya ushayakhalu sarvadasyal. Krishna says to Uddhava that I have given you this material body, which is a very, very rare thing, and if you have not utilized it, what can I do? That is Krishna's answer.
Bandhuralmalpanastasya enalmayvalmanajita analpanasta shatrutve vate edalmayiva shatruval.
That one should, Krishna says in this word,
one should develop that spiritual knowledge which is pure and which will elevate oneself and control one's mind and get out of that and identify oneself with his spirit soul, spiritual identification. Then through the mind, intelligence and senses, different karma will follow and our senses and mind will be activated by that. All that has to be stopped by the yoga process of yamam and niyamam and control it, and the mind should be brought under control. And this is the perfect way. Krishna says this is the way to develop friendship with oneself. That when one comes all these, brings all these things under control, particularly the mind and the senses, then he is acting as a friend to himself. Otherwise he is acting as an enemy. Otherwise it is an inimical way of life. That actually we all have the misconception that for enjoyment we require objects from the external world. That is why we engage our senses in sense enjoyment. But strictly speaking, from the Shastric point of view, real happiness is within the soul. When one is properly situated in the spiritual position, in spiritual identity as spirit soul, that is where real happiness comes from. But unfortunately, we don't have that experience of that. At the moment, we have experience of the sense enjoyment. So when sense enjoyment is giving happiness to the senses, we take it that that is the enjoyment, perfect enjoyment. We have completely misunderstood the standard of enjoyment either. So why sense enjoyment is not proper enjoyment is, real enjoyment does not bring distress. Whereas every sense enjoyment in this world definitely brings distress. You can take any sense enjoyment. There is no sense enjoyment which does not bring distress, is there? For example, eating. Somebody is fond of eating good food. And you know that eating a certain quantity is okay, within reason. But if you exceed that quantity, just because it's giving me happiness, I'm going to eat, what is the result will be? Another few days you won't be able to eat. That'll be the next thing. So that shows that that kind of enjoyment is actually distress. Then we have found out this philosophy, our theory is that everything should be controlled the way we should do it.
That is only for the sake of survival, but that is not enjoyment. Real enjoyment is that enjoyment which elevates a person, one can enjoy perpetually without having a fear of suffering later. Whereas all the other enjoyment in this material world, even including the greatest enjoyment as the modern world is talking about, known as a sex life, even that you have to pay a very heavy price for it, which is everybody is aware of that. So there is no happiness in this, strictly speaking, in sense enjoyment. You can claim that I am enjoying the life. Actually, what you are doing is you are trying to gratify the senses and thinking yourself to be enjoying. But real happiness is within the soul, not in the sense enjoyment and the material body. Material body has somehow is a cage that has been put on us by the material nature due to our own sinful activities in the previous times. So that is a way to analyze that. And we also have this, some people will argue in a different way. They will say, why did Krishna give all these senses then, if it is not for enjoyment? You will see often people arguing in this way also. Sometimes when you talk to very intelligent people, even their argument is like this. They will say, why has the God given us all these senses if it is not for enjoyment? Now, such people, it's not very easy to convince them, because they have fully convinced that the senses are for enjoyment. But Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita says, senses are not for enjoyment. Senses are meant for some higher purpose. These very same senses, if it is utilized properly, you can escape from this entanglement of material body once for all. That is the advantage of the senses. So, in order to explain that, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a fantastic story of a great personality called Maharaj Ambarish. This great personality, Ambarish Maharaj, he has engaged himself. He learned this process, how to engage his senses properly. If you read in the Bhagavatam, you will find Ambarish Maharaj's great knowledge about this. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo Vajamsi Vaikunda Gunanu Annani Karau Hare Mandira Marjanadishu Shrudim Chagara Chuda Sachidodaye Mukundalinga Alaya Darshane Drisham Talpratya Bhata Sparshenga Sangamam Gnanjadat Pada Saroja Saurabham Srimat Tulasi Amrasanam Tadarpidim Padau Harakshetra Padani Vandani Shirokrishikesha Padani Vandani Kamam Jadasyana Dukama Dhammeya Yeduttama Shloka Jana Ashraya Arati. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when this Maharaj Ambarish, a great personality in the Solar dynasty, who appeared long, long ago, what did he do? He did not choose any of these processes. He simply said, I got the senses, I will use it in this way. What did he do? Then, Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo. Simply he heard about Krishna all the time. Krishna's pastimes. This is what he heard. All the time. He was always hearing about Krishna. That means what? The mind was completely absorbed in Krishna. Simply talking about, there is so much wealth of literature about Krishna's pastime. Srimad Bhagavatam is one of them. And great, great personalities, Jayadeva Goswami wrote Gita Govindam, and Mukundamala by Kulasekhara Alwar, and Krishna Karnamadam by Vilamangala Thakur, and many others. Goswamis have compiled Brihad Bhagavatamrtam, and Vidagdhamadam, Lalitamadam, so many literature they have compiled about Krishna. So those who want to absorb their mind, all this literature is there. Savaimana Krishna Pada Aravindayo. So as much as he wanted, he engaged his mind in simply talking about Krishna, nothing else in this world. Simply talking about Krishna all the time, absorbing in Krishna. And when his mind was not absorbed in Krishna, what did he do? Vajamsi Vaikunda Gunanu Varnani. Simply spoke about Krishna. If he was not hearing, he was talking about Krishna. So one way or the other. So when he spoke about Krishna, what does that mean? The tongue was continuously engaged in glorifying Krishna. Isn't it? So the tongue came under control. First, the mind came under control, because all the time he heard about Krishna, hearing about Krishna. And secondly, he spoke about Krishna, so the tongue also came under control. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo Vajamsi Vaikunda Gunanu Varnani Karau Hare Mandira Marjanadishu. So when he wanted to do something, he went to the temple and started cleaning Krishna's temple. So the temple was always spotlessly clean. Why? Because the king is cleaning. When the king is cleaning, everybody else will join naturally, isn't it? That's normal. When a brahmachari tries to do, he'll say, oh, that's his problem, he can handle it. That is our mentality. That is the way we see it. When a poor brahmachari is cleaning up the temple, he's doing, as a service, he's doing it. But strictly speaking, when the king is doing it, you have no choice. If you come to the temple and the king is cleaning the temple, you can't tell the king, you carry on, I'm going to, so I have to talk to Krishna now. So that is not possible. Kare uhare mandiram arjanadishu. Then shudim chakara chuda salkadhodayim. And the ears he used in hearing about Krishna. So ears were used for hearing about Krishna. The tongue was used for talking about Krishna or for tasting prasadam sometimes. And the eyes, mugundalingalaya darshane drishavum. And eyes were used to see the beautiful form of Krishna in the temple. Like this, Grinangasatpaja Sarayojasa Virabham Shaimatulasyamrasanam Tadarpidein. That the smell, the capacity to smell, or the need to smell something, Ambarish Maharaj used the tulsi leaves, what was offered to Krishna, he started smelling them. He started smelling these tulsi leaves and the lotus flower offered to Krishna. And if still he was not satisfied, what did he do? I got the legs, he said. What should I do with that? He said, I will circumambulate the temple all the time. Padau Harekshetrapadani Vandani. That he simply, simply circumambulating Krishna's temple. That is what he did. And Shirao Krishikesha Padabhi Vandani. That when he wanted to offer his head, he offered the head at Krishna's lotus feet, in paying obeisances to Krishna. So ultimately, he used all his mind, body, senses, everything in Krishna service. Kamam janasyana dukamagamya yaduttama shloka janashraya haradi. By doing in this way, what did he do? He completely absorbed himself in Krishna. So it is a much better yoga system to control oneself, and that way there was no question of sense gratification. Everything in Krishna's service, the whole absorption of the mind, body, senses, everything. Whereas the yogi, normally he will endeavor very hard to bring the control of the mind, which is still difficult. Whereas for a devotee, it is much easier through this process of Krishna consciousness. That in this way, if one does that, automatically the mind will come under control. The senses will also come under control by hearing about Krishna. Krishna has spoken about this in the Srimad Bhagavatam very clearly. Jidatmana prashandasya paramatma samahida shidoshna sudukheshu tathamana avamanayoho. Then, heat, cold, happiness, distress, pious, sinful activities, all these are the dualities of this world. And when one's mind is brought under control, then you will become peaceful. Otherwise, these things will disturb you, isn't it? Every one of us get disturbed with the heat and cold, happiness and distress. And all these things and the reactions or pious activities, simple activities, when we are engaged in this world in different activities, sometimes we think, is this proper to do it or is this not proper to do it? Sometimes by Krishna's grace you get an opportunity to do something nice in Krishna consciousness. But majority of the time we are engaged in simple activities for things which are not important in this world. So you can see these are the dualities of this world, and that is what is controlling us very strongly. We are not able to escape from that. But Krishna says here that if one is able to engage in Krishna consciousness and come through this and able to control the mind, then he has got peaceful life. As long as the mind is very lively and expanded and absorbing everything in this material world, you have to experience the dualities of this world. And also at the same time, the nanatva bhrandi. Nanatva means that everything in this creation for us, for the normal living entity, we are exposed to this creative world, the created world, the external world. And as long as the mind is absorbed in this external world, it will never be satisfied. It has got so much to absorb in this world. And that means constantly the mind is chewing the external world. It is never able to see its own position as a spirit soul and its own identity. It never gets that opportunity. It is all the time exposed outside to the external world, busy with the external world. It is not able to turn inwards. It's always turned outwards. So Krishna says here, when the consciousness is purified, through the yogic process, one will be able to revert that vision which is outside towards inwards, and that is known as Andhramuhatvam. Andhramuhatvam means he is able to look inwards and is able to see his true identity. At the moment, none of us are able to really identify ourselves with the soul. Why? Because so much external it is, the mind is externally absorbed. Whereas it, when it turns inwards, internally absorbed, then it realizes there is a spirit soul and that is my true identity. Krishna says there, and that is when one starts enjoying oneself within the self, as it's called enjoying within oneself.
Jnana vijnana drupta atma kudasto vijadendriya yukta vityachudo yogi samaloshashma kanjana.
That when one is advanced on the spiritual path, due to the spiritual knowledge, he becomes peaceful. And when he is situated in oneself, then complete control on the senses and the mind comes to him. And then he is not disturbed by anything. Rupa Goswami says about this in the Bhaktisamasandhu. Adashri Krishna Madhina Bhave Grahim Indriya Iyam Seven Mukhavijihvados. Then, Seven Mukhavijihvados Soyem Eva Spiratyada. When the senses are brought under control and the mind is under control, why, how? By chanting the holy name of Krishna. Adha Shri Krishna Madi Nabhave Grahyam Indriyai. All these senses which are running in different directions and controlling us heavily, that will come under control once chants the holy names of Krishna. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita is always saying this. That this process of chanting Krishna's name, holy names of Krishna, eventually when one is sincere and seriously follow that process in due course, that will bring these things under control. Mind will come under control. The senses will also will come under control. And that is the result from that. Adha Shri Krishna Bhari Namadi Nabhave Engrahyam Indriyaihi. That indriyas which are external and which is oriented outwards, that will become come under control. So therefore, in different instances, you can see in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, great personalities, how they have given importance to these things. That in the, I think it was, yes, Maharaj Rishabhadev who spoke about this to his sons, how important it is to control the senses and the mind. And unless they are under control, it's not possible to do anything. Gurur na sasyal, sujano na sasyal, pidana sasyal, janani na sasyal, devam na sasyal, na vadishya sasyal, namahoja yedya samubeda murtyum. That is how Bhagavatam says about that. Gurur na sasyal, sujano na sasyal. You cannot become a teacher or spiritual master unless you are able to take your disciple back to the spiritual world and take him out of this material illusion. If you are not able to do that, you should not become a spiritual master. That's what Bhagavatam says. Guru na sasyal, svajano na sasyal. You should not say you are a relative of somebody if you are not able to change that person's outlook in life from material life to spiritual life. Otherwise, you are not a relative. You are just a parasite on that person. In other words, that relationship has no meaning. Simply for sense gratification, we relate with each other in this world, saying that this is my relative, this is this, this is that. So many different living relationships we create here. But Bhagavatam says, Guru na sasyal, sujano na sasyal, then pita na sasyal, janani na sasyal. You should not claim yourself to be a father if you do not induce your children to become, to surrender to Krishna, to take Krishna consciousness seriously. Otherwise you are not a father. And encourage him to use the human life to go back to the spiritual world. Nor you are a mother if you do not do the same thing. So in everywhere, Shukadeva is saying to his children, Gurur na sasyal, sojano na sasyal, pidana sasyal, janani na sasyal, devam na sasyal, na parishya sasyal. You should not consider yourself to be a demigod even if you are not able to help your people to advance on the spiritual path. Nor you should call yourself to be a husband if you are not able to encourage your wife to come to Krishna consciousness. Devam na sasyal, na parishya sasyal, na moja yedya samupeda mrityam. That if you are not able to get them out of this cycle of birth and death, mrityu, mrityu means death. If one is not able to get out of this cycle of birth and death, you have not fulfilled your obligations as any of these positions. Guru or spiritual master, relative, father, mother, or anything, any of these positions what's mentioned, you have not executed it properly. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam says. You will see this example in so many great personalities cases. Guru Varna Sasyal, best example, Mahavali. Mahavali, what did he do? When he found out that Shukracharya was not helping him to go back to Krishna, he rejected Shukracharya at that point. I don't want to do anything with you, he said. That because this is how your nature is, that you are more concerned about my material welfare, not about the spiritual side of my life. And that upset Mahabali. So what did Mahabali do? Mahabali rejected. In the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, you can read that story. Mahabali rejected Shukracharya and went for Krishna. He wanted Krishna, not anything else. So that is the best example. Guru Arna Sasyal, he is not a spiritual master, so rejected him. Guru Arna Sasyal, so Janona Sasyal, you are not helping you very much. Somebody is not helping you. Sujanona Sasyal, who is the best example? In Ramayanam, there is a personality called Vibhishana, Ravana's brother. This Ravana, Kumbhakarna, they were elder brothers of Vibhishana. Both of them, they were induced Vibhishana to fight against Lord Ramchandra. And they wanted Vibhishana to support them. But what did Vibhishana do? Vibhishana rejected both of them, Ravana as well as Kumbhakarna. In the Ramayanam, you can read that they have spoken, Vibhishana speaks at length, that what is the use of my so-called relationship with you if ultimately, if I reject Lord Ramachandra and simply maintain my relationship with you, what is the use of that? Vibhishana asks there this question. What is the point in having this relationship if ultimately the life is not to satisfy Krishna? I haven't got an opportunity here. Lord Ramachandra is coming here. My duty is to go and fall at his feet and ask for shelter. Instead of doing that, considering that you are my brothers and want to fight along with you against Ramachandra, I'm not going to do that. He rejected his relatives at that time. Just like Mahabali rejected Shukracharya, Vibhishana rejected his own relatives at some point because he found them not more favorable for his Krishna consciousness. So he rejected them. Guru Nasasyal, Sujana Nasasyal, Pidana Sasyal, Janani Nasasyal, Pidana Sasyal. Sometimes you have to reject your father also, like Prahlada did. Prahlada, that is what Prahlada did, isn't it? Prahlada Maharaj was, Hiranyakashipu was very good to Prahlada in many ways. Only thing is, Hiranyakashipu insisted Prahlada that he should follow his way of life, demonic way of life. And Prahlada from the very beginning told him, I cannot do that. Kaumaracharet prajno dharmam bhagavadaniha durlabham manusham janmam tadapyadhumarthadam. Why all these personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam is talking to us all these things to wake us up from our ignorance state of mind? Then Prahlada is saying to us that at the age of 5 he rejected Hiranyakashipu's offer. Hiranyakashipu offered him that if you just follow me, what I am telling you to listen to me, then all you have to do is to stop chanting this Hare Krishna and come with me and engage in sanskarification. You will be offered all the 3 planetary systems. You will be the king for the whole thing, emperor. Prahlad says, no, I don't want it. He rejected Hiranyakashipu. The result was that Hiranyakashipu gave him so much pain and so much difficulties in his life. But in spite of all that, Prahlada became victorious at the end. Krishna, Narasimha Murthy appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu. So, Pidana Sasyal, Janani Nasasyal. So you can see, he had to reject his father. Take for example Bharata's story in the Ramayana, Lord Ramchandra's brother Bharata. When Ramchandra and Lakshmana went to forest with Sita Devi, Bharata was in Kosalam, in his uncle's place, in KM, where his uncle was ruling. And he was not aware what was happening in Ayodhya. When he came back, when he heard that Kaikeyi was responsible for all this, his mother, and that Lakshmana and Ramchandra and Sita Devi had gone to the forest because Kaikeyi insisted that they should go to the forest, which you all know, the story of Ramayana. At that point, what did Bharata do? Bharata rejected his mother, isn't it? Bharata rejected his mother. So you can see the example throughout Ramayana and Mahabharata and Bhagavatam. These examples are there, great, great personality. They are rejecting. You think that they are all important, all these relatives and father, mother, brothers, this, that and the other. But as far as they are concerned, if they are not favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness, then one should reject them. Gurur na sasyal, sujanava na sasyal, pidana sasyal, janina sasyal, then devam na sasyal, na padishya sasyal, namo cha yendya samubeda mutyam. Devam na sasyal, demigods. Demigods are the names. So there, Katvanga went to fight in the war, to help the demigods in the great battle in the spiritual world, in the heavenly planets. When he went there and he realized that these demigods were not able to help him very much in his spiritual life. As soon as he heard that death is imminent, he told the demigods who have invited him to join them there, he told them that none of you can help me really. I'm going to Bhagavasham to spend my rest of the life. How much time have I got? That's all he asked. At least can you tell me that? And when he heard that he has only got a very, very small time to live, he decided to come back and engage in spiritual life, to go back to Krishna. So he rejected the demigods at that time. Devam na sasyal, na parishya sasyal. Srimad Bhagavatam says that the Brahmana's wives, if you remember that pastime in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna and Balaram came to the forest with the cowherd boys to engage in tending the cows and looking after them. And that time, the cowherd boys felt extremely hungry. Krishna and Balaram told them to beg for food and send them to beg food from the Brahmanas who were performing a sacrifice in the forest. We discussed this in the 10th canto. So when they went to the forest and they found, they asked for the food from the Brahmanas. Brahmanas refused to give them food. They came back and told Krishna. And Krishna and Balaram told the cowherd boys to go and ask the wives of the Brahmanas for the food. So when they asked for the food, Brahmanas' wives were very happy to bring as much prasadam as necessary and offered it to Krishna, Balaram and everyone else who were present there. So at that time, they rejected their husbands. Padishya sasyal namo jayendya samupe edamrutyam. So you can see Srimad Bhagavatam brings forward so many different personalities to tell us that how these great personalities have rejected their happiness in this world for the sake of Krishna, in order to advance on the spiritual path. So that is how they have performed their life in this world. Enemy, relative, friend, happy, pious personality, sinful personality, good person, bad person, all these things is coming from the mind. Actually, all these are modes of nature. Sometimes we say, oh, he's a very good person. Sometimes I'll say, he's a very bad man. We say like this, isn't it? About different people. Where does this all come from? It all comes from the mind. According to the modes of nature, that is dictating to us. That this is called Bhedabhavam. This Bhedabhavam means that always differentiating like this, between good and bad, happy, heat and cold, happiness and distress. This duality is, and from that, analyzing this material world. And as long as this duality keeps on building up inside, one will never be able to see that this, as long as one is absorbed in that thought, one will never recognize the living force behind all these things, which is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His parts and parcel, the living entity, the spirit soul. So we will not be situated in our spiritual platform as long as these dualities are continuously controlling us in this world. That therefore, one who wants to advance on the spiritual path have to constantly eliminate these kind of dualities from one's own life and keeps oneself fixed in the spiritual procession.
Yogi yunjira sadam atmanam rahasi sthita egagiya jitalma nirashira parigrahaham. That one should sit oneself in a quiet place and pure place and control one's mind, intelligence and the senses and continuously follow his own self, individual self, which is his own original spiritual identity. And all this in the middle of the huge amount of people and also engage in various material activities, it is difficult to control the mind and the senses. And that is the reason it is recommended that one should go into isolation and practice these things in isolation. It's all spoken to how to get the mind and the senses under control. But this is all in relationship with a yogi. But for a devotee, all these things comes along with the practice of Krishna consciousness. We'll continue next week. All glory to Shri Prabhupada.